Hi, I'm Amanda Hare, your host of Nuts and Bolts, presented by Vulcan Park and Museum. This is the third episode of the second season of the Nuts and Bolts podcast. As Vulcan turns 120 this year, this episode will reflect on the deterioration of Vulcan in 1999. In our last episode, we discussed the formation of Vulcan Park Foundation and the role that it played in raising the necessary funds to save Vulcan. But in this episode, we will dive deep into exactly what led to Vulcan being removed from his pedestal in 1999 and the state that he was in before being restored to the statue that many know and love today. Today, I have the pleasure of chatting with Gary Bostany. For more than 20 years, Gary has volunteered with Vulcan Park Foundation. In the late 1990s and early 2000s, he championed the restoration of the city's beloved statue. Since Vulcan Park and Museum opened in 2004, Gary has donated his time as a docent. He continues to serve on Vulcan Park and Museum's Museum Programs Committee, and he also serves as one of our tour guides for the Vulcan Park and Museum's Walking Tour Series. Let's dig right into it, shall we?
Yes, and first of all, thanks, Amanda, for inviting me here for the podcast. I've been looking forward to this.
So, Gary, since I've known you, your love and dedication for Vulcan has shined through. Now, were you born and raised in Birmingham?
I was born and raised here in Birmingham, right here on Southside. Lived in Five Point South neighborhood my entire life. Not in the same place, but, you know, different places.
Nice. Okay. And so I'm a transplant and I've been here for about 3 years now, and I've met so many natives, and I'm always interested to hear more about their early childhood memories. Share some of your childhood memories of Vulcan.
Well, actually, the times that I was able to see Vulcan when I was a child is when my grandparents drove down from Illinois to visit us. So my parents, I came from a large family. I'm the oldest of eight siblings. My parents really didn't have time to take us to Vulcan and all that. So when my grandparents came to visit here in Birmingham and visit us, that's when we got an opportunity to go to Vulcan. So I remember just about every year coming up here when they would come and visit us, and I was really amazed, but didn't really understand or know the history of Vulcan at that time, whereas a lot of people didn't either, because the statue was here and that was all that was here, and no one knew exactly why or what his purpose was.
So. Mm-hmm. Okay, and you talked about, you know, after the statue was installed, people didn't know what it was. And I still think some people, even natives today, still are a little confused, like, why is he up there and why is his bottom bare and all of those good things. But so after he was up there and the different elements of nature and, you know, the concrete that was poured into his chest that caused him to expand and all of that, this was in the 1930s, correct?
Yes, when they put him on the pedestal in the 1930s, at the time, Vulcan, the statue, was hollow. Mm-hmm. And they realized that being so large that he needed to be stabilized so he wouldn't fall off the pedestal, because the pedestal is you know, huge. It's, what, 125, 130 feet. So they filled him with concrete up to his chest to stabilize him. And that was in the 1930s, and over decades and decades of, like you mentioned, concrete would expand. There were leaks. Water would get in there and causing the statue to degrade and crack.
Gotcha. Okay. And we're going to circle back to that deterioration, because I'm going to mention what's currently going on at Vulcan Park and Museum now. But circle back, what caused you to become involved with the Vulcan Park Foundation?
Well, let's go back to 1999. I was president of the Five Point South Neighborhood Association at that time. And Vulcan Park sits right in that neighborhood, the Five Point South neighborhood. So when the Vulcan Park Foundation was formed, you know, they came to the neighborhood to explain to us what was going on and the goal to raise the money to refurbish the statue and build a whole new park. And they were at the time asking for people to get involved and volunteer. And I was one of the first to sign up. So I was really thrilled about that. And my goal in doing that was, you know, when I was president of the neighborhood, a lot of people would come to the meetings, and they were negative. They were all negative about certain things in the neighborhood. This didn't work right, or they complained about this. And you know, I said, sure, every neighborhood, every city has negative things, but we also have positive things. Mm-hmm. So my goal was to focus on the positive aspects of our neighborhood and our city, and Vulcan was one of them. Mm. Because I knew that once the story was told and we refurbished the statue and built the whole park and the word got out, it was going to be phenomenal. And that was a goal, and it worked.
Awesome. Yeah, I was always curious how you became involved, because you've been so passionate and so dedicated for so long, and we're so grateful to continue to have your expertise.
It's a pleasure to be here, and I will continue to volunteer up here and spread the word of this great museum.
Awesome. And we appreciate you, Gary. So going back to the deterioration, so water also entered the statue through an opening in Vulcan's head, and that caused rust. And so when he was repaired in the 1960s and 1970s, well, 1960s into 1971, the city painted Vulcan this iron ore color, and they widened the pedestal and they enclosed the observation deck. Gary, talk to us about the state of Vulcan that he was in during the 1980s.
Well, you know, let's go back when when the city of Birmingham was in charge of Vulcan, and the statue was deteriorating. They knew that it needed an uplift. They need to do something different, mm-hmm. to bring people back. The statue was deteriorating. Less and less people were coming up here. You know, the place wasn't kept up like it should have been kept up. And so the city decided at that point to let's renovate it. Let's give it a whole new look so people would go up there. And they did. They modernized Vulcan, the pedestal of Vulcan, which at that time was a good idea, but over time that became a mistake. Mm-hmm. So they actually covered the beautiful sandstone pedestal with a marble cladding, mm-hmm. and they enclosed the observation deck up at the top, and had it all glassed in like a airline terminal. And there was a roof on that. And mm-hmm. once you got up to the observation deck, because there was a roof on this, you know, glass and observation deck, you couldn't even see the statue. Mm-hmm. And the whole purpose of going up is not only to see the view of the city, but to see the statue as well. So when you went up, you just didn't see the statue at all. So I guess they just focused on the view. And over time, less and less people started to come to Vulcan in the 80s and the 90s. And the city, you know, they kept it up, but they didn't do more. They just mm-hmm. did what they had to do, you know, because it wasn't an issue. And a lot of people would stop coming up here. It turned out more people were coming from out of town, visitors, to see the statue. And in some ways, it could have been a disappointment because, you know, the local community wasn't here, and they would come up here and look at it and see it starting to deteriorate. And a lot of people said at one time, before we had freeways, the street that goes right by Vulcan was the old Highway 31. Mm-hmm. So if you were traveling from the north going to the south, like to the beaches, you would come right by Vulcan, and people actually stopped here thinking it was a rest stop.
That's funny.
we had to change that image too. So, but it was along the late 80s and early 90s that the statue started to deplete again. And the city would put a Band-Aid solution on fixing the cracks. And then they realized at that time, you know, it was in such bad shape that they had to close the park in the late 90s, 1998, 99, because it was becoming a liability.
Mm-hmm. Mm, okay. And so now we're coming into the 90s. And so after those repairs in the 60s, what caused Vulcan to nearly crumble in 1999?
Well, it was the lack of maintenance and repairs. Mm. You know, as you know, iron and steel will rust, mm-hmm. If it's not kept clean and painted. And it goes back to the same material that it once was, that red, rocky, powdery you know, when something starts to rust, it turns that back that color.
Okay.
And they actually had his arm that was holding up the torch. There was a huge crack there, and they actually took pieces of metal to almost like a Band-Aid screw into where the crack was to keep the arm from falling off. That was one of the reasons after a while that they decided we've got to close this park, because if this were to fall off, it would, you know, be a liability and hurt somebody. So it got to the point where the statue was just in bad shape, again, because of the concrete. It would expand, especially, you know, the temperature changes and exposed to the elements. And when that concrete expanded, it just made the cracks wider and bigger. So, but yeah, anything that's iron or steel, you have, especially if it's out in the elements, if it's indoors, not a problem, but if it's out in the elements, it has to be maintained constantly. It has to be cleaned and it has to be painted. And, that was not done, unfortunately at the time.
Oh, gotcha. And I think, you know, that's important, especially for, the citizens of Birmingham to understand, because I think, you know, people, when we do all of these events that we do at Vulcan Park Museum, our community events, or they don't understand why it's a ticketed fee to actually enter the park. And it's because, you know, we actually are responsible for maintaining Vulcan Park and Museum, you know, not just the park grounds and keeping them maintained and manicured, which is, you know, costs in and of itself, but also, like you mentioned, the statue itself. Mm-hmm. So that's great for our listeners to know. So actually, I'm going to go back. In 1976, Vulcan and Vulcan Park and Museum received historic designation on the National Register of Historic Places, and that's administered by the National Park Service. So what that means is that, you know, great care must be taken to ensure that both the statue and the observation tower are continuously monitored for areas needing repair, maintenance, and more importantly, restoration. But Gary, in all of your involvement with the foundation and Vulcan Park and Museum, what did you do to help get the word out about Vulcan? Like you talked about changing that perception, because it was once negative, and sometimes I think it kind of gets skewed that way even today. So what did you do to help get the word out?
Well, I was actually one of the first volunteers to sign up to with the Vulcan Park Foundation. Mm-hmm. The Vulcan Park Foundation was formed, and the goal was to raise the funds to restore the statue to its historical significance and to build a history museum to tell a story about Vulcan.
Mm-hmm.
That was the main goal, and we had 5 years to do that. And my goal at that time, because there was nothing up here at the park, we had the building, the museum wasn't constructed. The statue was down and taken to Sylacauga to be repaired, mm-hmm. and the pedestal was being worked on. So we had a mountain of red mud, red dirt, the pedestal, and a trailer. And the trailer consisted of the director of Vulcan Park and Museum, at that time was Catherine Billmeyer,
mm-hmm.
and Marilyn Henley, who was the assistant, and then me, one of the first volunteers. And I think we had a security guard up here, too, to just look after the trailer. My goal was to go out to civic organizations and groups and to schools and retirement homes to tell the story about the Vulcan Park Foundation and what our plans were.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave me some great visuals of what the park was going to look like, what the museum was going to look like. And these were large visuals. I had about a dozen of them. These were the architectural drawings of what the park was going to look like. And I would take these visuals and go to civic organizations, luncheons, on a monthly basis to tell the story about what we're doing up here at Vulcan to help raise money.
Mm.
And I really enjoyed that. Just going out with those large visuals and taking them to groups of anywhere from 25 to 150 people.
Oh, wow.
And I wasn't there to raise money or collect money. It was just more or less me getting the word out of what we were going to do to mm-hmm. this fantastic statue and build this park. Because prior to that, like I said, everything was so negative about Vulcan, and people were just looking for some good news about mm-hmm. the statue, because, you know, everybody here grew up with it, and we knew it was not, you know, the best place to go visit, and it needed to happen. And everybody that I went to and talked to, they were just amazed and excited and couldn't wait for this to happen.
Oh, that's awesome. And obviously my PR hat is on when you say that, and I'm just envisioning you like that. That's incredible, Gary. That's exciting. So in our next episode, I'm going to sit down with Bill Gilchrist. We're going to talk more in depth about Vulcan's restoration. But Gary, why do you personally think it was so important to restore the statue in the beginning?
Well, let's go back because of its historical significance. I mean, this is what built our city. This is a symbol of our city. Birmingham is one of the rarest places on the planet that has all three ingredients to make iron and steel, which is iron ore, limestone, and coal. And they're abundant within a 50-60 mile area. So that alone, that history, Vulcan tells that story. And then we also had a massive railroad system, which some people call the fourth ingredient, because mm-hmm. without that railroad system, you couldn't move all these rocks and elements to go to the foundries to make the iron and steel.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very important when the Vulcan Park Foundation was formed to focus on the history of Vulcan and how it built this city. As a result, let's go back to 1904 when Vulcan was built. Birmingham, as well as the country, had an influx of immigrants coming from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of the iron and steel industry here in Birmingham and the building of Vulcan, Birmingham's population tripled from 1904 to 1920. It tripled. It went from 40,000 people in 1904 to 120,000 by 1920. So imagine in a 16-20 year period, you had almost 1,000 people a month moving to Birmingham from all over the world.
Wow.
And when these people came here, they brought their architects, they brought their food, they brought their customs and their ways of living, and that's how Birmingham at that time became a multicultural city. And the neighborhood that we are in right now, that Vulcan is in, that neighborhood has the most diverse population in the entire state of Alabama as a result of all those immigrants moving here. So we had to keep that history. We had to tell that story, and Vulcan tells that story. Vulcan has witnessed everything that's gone on in our city for the last 117, 18 years.
Mm-hmm.
So he saw everything, and we need to make sure that, you know, people realize how we were built.
Wow, that is incredible. And thank you for sharing that, Gary, with our listeners. Before I wrap up, is there anything else that you want to enlighten our listeners? Any last thoughts that you want to share, Gary?
Well, I'd just like to say, if you haven't been up to Vulcan and Vulcan Park and Museum, you've got to give us a visit. I think you'll be impressed. Unfortunately, there are people who live in Birmingham who have not been to Vulcan since we renovated it back in 1999, 2000, mm-hmm. or when we first opened the park in 2004. It's completely different from the way they grew up and remember Vulcan.
Mm-hmm.
It is definitely not just a statue on a pedestal anymore. It's a museum. And it tells the story and the history, and it's a great place. And I like to also mention to people, this is a free public park. It just happens to have the largest cast iron statue in the world. It is a public park, and we encourage people to come up here and enjoy this park. You don't have to come up here just to see the pedestal or go through the museum.
Correct.
Once you've done that, you know it's there, but we want you to just come up here and enjoy the park.
Absolutely. And circling back to what you said, I know as a PR professional, when I'm out and about in the community, it always, I won't say surprises me anymore at this point, but I'm just always amazed at how many people, especially natives, they either have never been or they haven't been since they came on a field trip when they were like 9 years old, and now they're probably 40 plus.
Exactly. And I'm also an educational docent up here, so I give tours to middle school kids. And most of the time, if I have a group of 30 or 40 kids, there'll be three or four teachers, and there'll be three or four parents. And the parents actually come up to me and said, I had no idea this was like this or so nice. When I was a child, this was not here. And so they're coming with their children and they're relearning and seeing what their kids are seeing. And they go out and they spread the word. Oh, I went to Vulcan the other day with my kids' class and everything. You got to go if you haven't been or whatever. So this is what's so good, because all the people that come up here, they have a positive experience, and they go back and they tell their neighbors and their family, their friends about it, and it just encourages more people to want to come up here.
Yes, absolutely. And we are the only comprehensive museum in the area. So, I mean, I think that's important for the students to come and learn all of that history and come back when they're adults.
Exactly. Yeah.
I want to thank my guest, Gary Bostany, for taking a break to sit down and speak with us. And thank you all for listening to Nuts and Bolts presented by Vulcan Park and Museum. We'll catch you next time as we dig into the restoration of Vulcan and how he overcame the deterioration that we've talked about today. Go to visitvulcan.com to learn more about Vulcan's history, and be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter, which is now X, at Visit Vulcan, to keep up with the happenings atop Red Mountain.